Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for February 8th, 2013.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
The planets that are really far away, we cannot detect anything about them but the atmosphere. So the atmosphere is the only observable part of the planet.
While I have the cold and am playing the harmonica, I would not give it to my best friend for him or her to play, because that might well be a mechanism for the virus to be transmitted.
The enzyme holds on to a small piece of double-stranded DNA using two fingers.
This week, how antibiotic-resistant bacteria spread, tracing HIV back millions of years, and how life thrives among the storm clouds. But first, Suzanne Bard answers a listener's question.
Jeff Enterline of Youngstown, Ohio, plays the harmonica in a rock band. Recently, he played a gig while suffering from a cold. He wants to know how long he should wait before playing the instrument again to avoid reinfecting himself. Well, not to worry, Jeff. According to Vanderbilt University infectious disease specialist William Schaffner, you'll develop antibodies to those particular germs so they won't make you sick again. Of course, while you're sick, you shouldn't share your harmonica.
When he has the cold, he will contaminate his harmonica, and left alone, that virus will diminish in concentration fairly rapidly over a series of hours, because the harmonica is not a very hospitable environment for that virus.
Schaffner says he was recently asked whether students who play horn instruments in band and regularly share their instruments should routinely disinfect them between use. He says to use common sense. Germs spread best through direct contact between people. Kids shouldn't share instruments while they're sick, but using a sani wipe to clean off the mouthpiece between healthy students should be enough. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug.
Thanks, Suzanne. Bacteria can thrive in storm clouds and travel thousands of miles on air currents. This according to microbial ecologist Tina Santel-Temkew of Aarhus University in Denmark. She and her team collected hailstones that fall to the ground during storms. Inside the hail, they discovered a number of different bacterial species that normally live on plants. They also cataloged over 3,000 chemical compounds within the hail. Some of these supply nutrients to the bacteria, which allows them to grow and reproduce high in the atmosphere.
By growing in cloud droplets, they can influence the chemical composition of the cloud water and also of the atmosphere. And they may have also some influence on climatic processes.
In turn, the storm clouds influence the evolution of the bacteria, since only certain hardy types can survive the atmospheric stress. She says one exciting application of the research is that it could help scientists detect life on other planets in the future. That's because if a planet's atmosphere contains microorganisms, they would change its chemical signature.
The planets that are really far away, we cannot detect anything about them but the atmosphere. So the atmosphere is the only observable part of the planet.
Antibiotic resistance has become a major challenge to modern medicine. It's already known that bacteria can actually transfer resistance to others of their kind. Now, researchers have figured out how one species does it. Correspondent Justin Warner has the story.
Many disease-causing bacteria can actually pass antibiotic resistance genes back and forth to each other. Now, a team led by microbiologist Matthew Redenbaugh of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill has identified how Staphylococcus bacteria do it on a molecular level. He says it was known that Staph transfers the resistance through small rings of DNA called plasmids. His team worked out exactly how a key enzyme called NES snips open the Staph DNA so the plasmid can get into it.
What we found out was that the enzyme holds on to a small piece of double-stranded DNA using two fingers that pinch the DNA on either side. And we found out that those fingers were essential for starting this drug resistance propagation step. And then we also found out that the other half of the enzyme provides a scaffold that's essential to completing the resistance transfer. And by understanding those things, we start to get detailed information about where we might be able to disrupt this process using small molecules or some sort of therapeutic lead.
In fact, he and his colleagues at Caltech created a polymer that binds to the enzyme's target and prevents the transfer from taking place. If developed further, it could open up a new way to stop the spread of resistance, which can actually happen within an infected patient.
Thanks, Justin. HIV, the virus that causes AIDS, was first identified in 1983, and scientists estimate it jumped from primates to humans in Africa about a century ago. But similar types of viruses may have been circulating millions of years before humans even appeared on Earth. Researchers have discovered that lentiviruses, the type of virus that includes HIV, have been circulating in non-human primates for 5 to 12 million years. That's over 100 times longer than previous estimates. Prior studies relied on viral genes, which mutate constantly and are hard to track. So instead, virologist Michael Emmerman of the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center and the University of Washington looked at anti-lentivirus genes in primates that arose during past outbreaks.
Primates encode antiviral genes whose job is to eliminate certain viruses. And so we can date back to when those changes occurred in the DNA of the host by tracing back through evolution. So when we see those changes, that's when we know there must have been a virus present.
Emmerman notes that over 40 non-human primate species carry lentiviruses today, some of which could potentially jump to humans like HIV did. He says that studying antiviral genes like these in present-day primates could help researchers plan treatments in the event that happens. Well, that's all we have for you this week. Next week, we'll be reporting from the AAAS annual meeting in Boston, Massachusetts, where scientists will converge to share the latest developments in their fields. While you're waiting for that, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your question, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirschhorn for AAAS, the Science Society.